So I guess I'll have a bit for yeah. Okay, you know, finish off your networks.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thanks to Ava and Andrew for the opportunity to participate. And my friend Chuck and I have enjoyed watching the last two nights. It's this year the focus of my presentation is what I refer to as organizations as unusual, as in a contrast to organizations as usual, which is kind of where we work, where we interact every day. And the subtitle is, and you'll see when I get into the remarks, opportunities, moving to great opportunities and getting out of this mode of focusing on big problems. And so anyway, with that, we'll get started. All right, and to no surprise, these remarks are heavily based on my interactions with Dr. Deming and the Deming community, but also with Junichi Taguchi and his community and Russ Akoff and his community. And it is through these communities that I look at Toyota and the lean production system, I think in a slightly different way. And so before his death in 1993, Dr. Deming provided us with a quote, map of theory by which to understand the organizations that we work in. And he was absolutely aware of the challenges executives faced and the challenges organizations face in what he called the prevailing style of management, which I'm referring to as business as usual. And beginning with an understanding of the contrast between usual and unusual, I'm going to provide some insights to program managers and how you can add Deming's unusual insights into your everyday efforts. Okay. And also I want to point out that I find these ideas applicable to far more than the making cars and making rocket engines. I've had the opportunity to work, as you see in this photo, with the Philips light bulb factory and near Glasgow, Scotland. The lower left photo is the City Council of York, England. The lower right is a library staff at a major university in California. Then a fun group, third and fourth graders that I had the opportunity to interact with and present Dr. Deming's ideas in a modified version. So I find the ideas easily applicable across the board. So the focus of these remarks, I'm going to start off with some setting the stage with some basics from Dr. Deming, and then move into what really got me excited by all of this work is how do organizations and individuals manage resources? How do we spend our time? What do we focus on? Generation of ideas. How do we use space? And so I'll get into that area. And then use that to contrast the difference between organizations as usual and unusual. Okay. And then close with opportunities to act. What can you do with this? So first, Dr. Deming. Born in 1900, died in 1993. Makes it easy to figure out every year what his age was. And I visited his adopted hometown of Powell, Wyoming, in 10, 12 years ago. And what I found in the Google map in the lower left is a town that was very much like the town he grew up in, where the major crop was the growing sugar beets, which in the early 1900s was a major source of sugar in the United States. And instead of horse-drawn carriages, as you see in the lower right, what you see is mechanized production equipment, tractors and things like that. But the town is almost forgotten in time. Everything's pretty much the same. And the major reason I wanted to bring up Deming's background is that what he saw growing up was collaboration, teamwork. He saw quilting bees, barn raisings. He saw incredible cooperation between the Great Western Sugar Company in Denver, Colorado, which placed full-page ads in the local paper with advice to farmers on how to plant the beets, when to plant them, when to thin them, and when to harvest. And so what he grew up seeing was collaboration. So his life's work was, you know, began with seeing collaboration, and then in his later years working with Ford and GM and Xerox and on helping organizations foster collaboration, which is the heart of business as unusual. Okay. Deming earned his PhD at Yale in 1928, and then they went on to become discovered late in his life. The lower right, the lower center photo is an image from the NBC documentary, If Japan Can, Why Can't We? So it was when he was 1980 that he became widely discovered for his work in Japan, notably with Toyota. Quote, there's not a day I don't think about what Dr. Deming meant to us. Deming is the core of our management. These glowing words were spoken at the 1991 Deming Prize ceremony by Shushiro Toyota, former president of the Toyota Motor Corporation and son of the founder. And I point this out because I don't think Deming's ideas come through well enough with people who are studying Toyota. I think we hear about elimination of waste, non-value-added activities. I think there's a lot more going on in how those resources are managed, you know, governed by insights from Dr. Deming. Here's a photo of when I met Dr. Deming for the first time in 1990. And I watched him speak three times that day. And I kid friends, you know, asked, what did he learn? And what did I learn? And the good news is I had three chances to see him that day. And a colleague who worked closely with him asked him once, what did people get out of your seminars? And his response is on this slide. He said, I know what I said. I don't know what they heard. And it took me a while to begin to appreciate what he was saying. And as a result of that, it's, you know, when I hear people explaining Deming's work, I think, you know, there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. That's what I'm hoping to cover in these slides. One simple question Dr. Deming asked, and this is a question I would encourage the lean practitioners to ask, ask their colleagues, and it really sums up well the contrast between business as usual and business as unusual. First, you have to get over the notion that when you ask somebody this question, you get a double take, a double look from them, like, did you really ask me about how to wash a table? And you say, yes, I'd like to know. You know, I'd like you to list, you know, the five things you need to wash a table. And what you'll find is you get the standard, you need a table. And so I would, to keep the table off the list, my advice to you would be, when you ask the question, you know, tell the person you're asking that there's a table around the corner. You just need a list of five things to wash it. Then you'll hear things like, you need water, you need a bucket, you need a sponge, you need soap, you need someone to do it. The list could be six or seven things. But chances are what will not come forth as an answer to the question is you need to know the context in which the table will be used. You need to know, in order to wash the table, are you washing it for eating off of? Are you washing it for a card game? Or are you washing it for surgery? And so in a business as usual environment, context is everything. And so if you can answer this question, what I encourage you to find out is, do people think about the context of the use of the table, or do they think about the practice and the items you need as opposed to the use of the table? Which leads to a famous figure that Dr. Deming shared in Japan in December of 1950, referred to as production viewed as a system. What's significant about this is that what comes around goes around. All right, and we just give you some contrast here. Okay. A production viewed as usual system has a beginning. It has suppliers that provide raw materials, then has a flow through our organization, then release to the customer, and then we're done. Right? We're done. Business as unusual is when, if you're on a football pitch, you pass the ball, then you look to see how well it was caught, and then use that information to adjust the next time you pass the ball. And it's not just pushing the ball forward and then moving on. It's a feedback loop where you listen to, you ask a question, you present information, you hear how it's used, and then use that information to judge how well you did in delivering the information. But if all you do is ask a question, present information, and never interact with the students to hear how that information is internalized, then you're missing the notion that what comes around goes around. So what I find, in just as an opening, the business as unusual sees everything in the context of a feedback loop. Business as usual is you meet requirements for your task, you pass on to the next person, they accept it, and you're done. And I want to reinforce that with how organizations look at quality. Apologize for the delay here. What's going on? All right. Dr. Deming's explanation of quality says a product or service possesses quality if it helps someone and enjoys a sustainable market. The prevailing definition of quality in organizations around the world and that I've seen is quality is defined by conformance to requirements. So every person is given a set of requirements to meet. If those requirements are met, they say that what they've achieved is good. But that doesn't lend itself to looking at how well it's received. What you're looking at is how well it was, how well the pass left your hand, not how well the pass was received. So I reinforce that with the notion that what Deming is talking about is looking at how your work affects others and then using that input to modify how you're delivering it in the future. That's highly unusual. Focusing on meeting requirements and passing forward, that's usual. And I've seen that in every organization I work in. It's allowed. It's alive and well. Dr. Taguchi, who I spent a great deal of time with, defines quality as the minimum of loss imparted to society by a product after its shipment to the customer, which, very much like Dr. Deming, is looking at how your work affects others. So Dr. Deming would define high loss as a football player passing the ball forward and the person receiving it having to stretch extraordinarily in order to receive the ball or slow down or accelerate too quickly and be injured in the process. Dr. Deming Taguchi refers to that as loss. Low loss would be that the ball is passed at the appropriate speed to the appropriate location and catches the player in stride. Okay, it's not just the release of the ball, it's how well it's received. And that's organizations as unusual, looking at how your work affects them. Okay, now let's move on to resource management reflections. And this is what got me thinking deeply about Dr. Deming's work in the early 90s. The simple question. And I encourage you to think about how it would be answered in your respective organizations. How much time is spent every day discussing parts, tasks, activities, milestones, etc., which are good and completed on time? And in 2011 and 2012, when I spoke in Birmingham at the Lean Management European Conference, both times in those audiences, the answer was zero. And pretty much everywhere I go, the answer is zero. Right. Now, when I go to college audiences, which I do quite a bit, in the context of a classroom, the question is, how much time is spent studying for the final exam, questions from the weekly quizzes in the midterm, which were correct? And what I find that the answer to that question is very similar to the answer to the first question. And I want you to think of this in terms of how are resources used? How is time used? How is energy used on things that are good and things that are known? And what I find in both cases is little time is spent discussing what we know, which is going well. That's an explanation of organizations as usual. When I asked this question of one of the first times I asked it, and the answer was easily zero. I had been in the meeting for 2 hours, and all the talk was about scrap and rework and problem suppliers. So when I asked this question, the guy in the front row raised his hand, you know, big zero. And I said, well, could it be that the thinking behind the answer being zero is that our thinking process is, if it's not broken, don't fix it? And there was a sense of the audience that, yes, that's a good explanation. Well, then ponder this. If our thinking model is, if it's not broken, don't fix it, when would we put gas in our cars? When would we go to the doctor? When would we call the plumber? And what you're finding is, in each of those situations, we will wait for trouble to happen before we take action, because we cannot justify in our existing business as usual model why on earth would we spend any time working on things which are good, which guarantees we're going to work on them when they're bad. The downside is we will be surprised when that happens. And so, yeah, commonly referred to it as like asking my friend Chuck, who's with me, saying, you know, we're driving along, I say, let's get gas, and Chuck says, well, we have gas. And I say, well, here's a gas station, let's get gas. And he says, well, we have gas. What's missing is there's a difference in asking, do we have gas, than how much. And what I find is our thinking views things as in absolute terms, that we know something or we don't, that it's good or it's bad. What we're missing is shades of gray. What do I mean by proactive? Applying effort while things are good. And what do I mean by reactive? Applying effort when things are bad, going to the doctor when you're sick, or focusing on things that are incorrect. Imagine this. Here's another scenario I encourage you to ponder for yourself, and then ask your clients, ask your coworkers. What if you said, beginning on Monday morning, all incoming material as well as all tasks completed internally within our organization will meet requirements that arrive on time, on budget, etc. What changes would begin to appear within hours, days, weeks, and years? And one of the first times I asked this question, there's a guy in a seminar, and he worked in the quality organization, and his job was dispositioning parts which were bad. And within a few minutes, he says, I wouldn't have a job, meaning he said he wouldn't have a job. And I said, okay, now keep on thinking, where do you see this going? And after a few minutes, he said there'd be no role for the quality organization. If everything's going to be good and on time, guaranteed. And again, what I told him is, I'm not saying how we achieve this, but I just want you to think about, if we magically achieve that result, what changes would we see in the organization? And what I distinctly found then, and every time I've asked this question, is there's a sense of we've achieved nirvana, we've achieved some utopian state. And I say that couldn't be further from the truth. But that's the mindset. The mindset is, if we imagine no problems, that's our ambition, that's our goal. And that's not the case. But there's something to that that I want to focus on and bring your attention to. In a very simple model, I look at organizations and the activities in an organization, and I ask, are the resources of the organization used in a proactive manner, meaning focusing on things that are not broken, things that are going well, or reactive? And what I find, overwhelmingly reactive. Again, what's missing is, why would we work on things that are good? Why would we study anything that we know well? And also, let me point out that organizations, as unusual, have finite resources. So I'm not talking about, oh, it'd be nice to have, you know, an overabundance of resources. And I'm saying the difference between these organizations is not the amount of resources, it's how they are utilized. A friend years ago went to work in a company in Chicago, and a year later, after being named plant manager, she called me up very excited that she got the job as plant manager. And she said, what should I focus on first? My response was, what do you think you should focus on? Her response back was, I think I should focus on all the things that are broken. To which I said, that requires no thought at all. I said, you're going to sit there and wait for problems to happen. and they will continue to happen, and they will continue to happen, and continue to happen. And she asked for an example of, you know, what to do differently. And I pointed out to her that several times a year, based on the data she shared with me, there was a crisis in the organization associated with the water supply and the bacteria levels in the water supply used in the product they were making. And action happened after the bacteria count spiked. And she, you know, I asked her, you know, how much that cost, and she gave me an explanation. I said, well, do you monitor on a regular basis the bacteria level in the water supply? She said, no. I said, well, what if you monitored it on a regular basis? It could be once an hour, once a week, once a month. But if you're not monitoring the bacteria level on a regular basis, like watching a gas gauge, what you're really doing is waiting to run out of gas before you take action and waiting for the bacteria count to spike. And so this becomes an example that if we shift our thinking from, you know, things are good, things are good, things are good, to seeing degrees of good. So it's not that the car has gas, it's how much gas, which shifts our thinking from black and white to shades of gray. That is how we can avoid big problems. Some thoughts on being proactive. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Francis Bailey, English astronomer in the same time frame as Ben Franklin in the late 1700s, said, a stitch in time saves nine. Then the last quote from Barack Obama a year or so ago, he said, every dollar we invest in high-quality early education could save more than $7 later on. And my focus is not the seven or the nine. My focus is the leverage potential that comes from being proactive, if proactive is warranted. And so if you look at it, how we manage resources in an organization, if we wait for the disease, we've lost the leverage. And I just want to, you know, pause here and have you think about, you know, obviously, if I were to ask you, where do organizations tend to operate? Not on the vertical axis, which we've already discussed, it's highly reactive. What I then started to focus on, given a focus on the resources being mine or ours, are the resources for our use within the company? Is it a we organization where we share, practice teamwork? Or is it a me organization where it's about my conference room, my people, my department, my customers, my conference room? And when I share this model with people, overwhelmingly they say that their organizations operate in the lower left. And that is another indication of business as usual. Now, when I ask where would organizations operate if it was business as usual, then it's not a stretch of the imagination to see organizations that operate on the hours side of the equation. But what I'll show you later is it might be a surprise as to where in this model they do operate. So for the time being, I'd like you to think about where, if the lower left is where organizations operate in a business as usual mode, where do you think in this four quadrant model organizations would act in a business as unusual mode? And I just ask each of you to make a mental note of that. Okay, now let's talk about products and services. And is another attempt on my part to say that what I'm presenting to you is not unique to rocket engines or automobiles. No matter what product or service is conceived, it's conceived as some definite product or service. And the contrast will emerge in a few slides. It's conceived as a cordless screw gun, or it's conceived as a rocket engine or a 787 or an A380, you name it. Okay. It's conceived with uses in mind, but it's managed by taking the product or the service and breaking it into parts. And this is the significance, is that it's conceived with a sense of wholeness. It's managed with a sense of parts. So we fragmentation comes in, we break this up, and everyone is assigned one of those parts, one of those tasks. Then we decide if we're going to make it, we're going to buy it. But we manage parts. We do not manage, and what we're missing in managing parts will alarm you. Or you could say may alarm you. All right. So the action, the focus on the actions is how are we doing with the parts, but that's not teamwork. Teamwork is how well do those players, how well do those parts play together, right? That's business as usual. It is not the focus on the actions, it's the focus on the interactions. Okay, had the opportunity to spend a good amount of time in the last 10 years with Russ Aghoff before he died a few years ago. And a reminder from Russ, he said, a system is never the sum of its parts, it's the product of the interactions of its parts. The art of managing interactions is very different indeed from the art of managing actions, and history requires this transition for effective management. The focus on actions, the focus on looking at things in isolation, saying, this is a good cap, this is a good hole, this is a good whatever, misses the point that it's part of a greater system. Okay. Business as unusual, organizations as unusual, is about managing how well things come together, which is a joint responsibility. I asked this question many years ago of a very senior NASA executive. And at the time, our company did quite a bit of work for NASA. And I said, what letter grade is required for all the parts and services as well as tasks completed internally? And I find the answer to this question is equally the same everywhere I go. So it's not just where I work, where I have worked. I find it's a universal phenomenon. Also, I want you to think about what is the letter grade internally, not just as things come into the organization, what is the letter grade required on every handoff? As department D hands off to E, E hands off to F, P hands off to F, on every handoff within your respective organizations, what is the requirement? And the very senior NASA executive's response was A+. In fact, with little hesitation, he said A+. And I said, well, to no surprise, I said, the letter grade requirement is actually passing. It's not an A+. Letter grades in the United States tend to be A+, as high as you get, and then a B, then a C, then a D. And below a D is failing. So I pointed out to him is that our quality system, our procurement system, is a pass-fail system. We take parts and services that meet requirements. Meeting means passing, not failing. It's actually a pass-fail system. Right? And this has major implications. So if we're looking at each of those tasks, in a cordless screw gun, in an airplane, in a rocket engine, or it could be software services, and we're integrating the software modules, what we're saying is that every one of those, upon delivery to the final integration, must be passing, not failing. That's the model in which we run our organizations. That is business as usual. Okay, so we look at each one and say it's pass, it's fail, pass or fail, pass or fail, pass or fail. This is another example. By looking at each in isolation, we're managing actions. Those are organizations as usual efforts. Okay, I also refer to that as a macro system model. If any of you are interested, contact me. I've written several articles about many of these topics for the Lean Management Journal. What we're saying is we take the tasks that are completed, they get passed forward to a sub-assembly, onto a final assembly. All of these tasks must be integrated. What's missing in the model is how well they integrate. Okay, what's missing is 60, 70, 80, 90, and 100 are all passing grades. The macro system model, which is the predominant model that I see in business as usual, we view things as good, not bad, and we take the things that are good and integrate them. That model does not take into account the difference between a 60, 70, 80, 90, and 100. That model ignores the variation, whatever it is, amongst the parts that are good. Think back, kind of like ignoring the difference between a quarter of a tank and a full tank when asking, does the car have gas? What the macro system model does is say, we have gas. We have gas. The parts are good. In such a model, we won't take action until the car runs out of gas. We won't take action until we're sick. So my explanation is the reason we are reactive is that we work with a flawed model that doesn't see the difference between a quarter of a tank and a full tank. We treat everything which is good as equally good. All right, so here's an inspiration for challenging this model of interchangeable parts. And my premise is what's going on within Toyota is not the macro system model treating everything as good as equally good. My proposal is there's far more going on than that, and they are managing relationships, which has to do with what Ford discovered in this example. And so, as a preview, Ford designed the transmission in the early 80s, had it produced in two locations, one in-house in Batavia, Ohio, the other by Mazda in Japan. Much to the surprise of Ford's corporate warranty office, the number of complaints associated with the erratic shifting of the transmission produced by the Batavia transmission were three times greater than the transmission complaints received on the Mazda transmission. Okay, this got the attention of the Ford corporate warranty office. When they looked at the transmission, which looked something like this, and the main thing I want to focus your attention on is you see valves, okay, and springs, and those valves and springs go inside the holes, okay, and how well they fit within the holes affects the function of the transmission. Upon close examination, Ford realized that their manufacturing focus was on the valve diameter and the bore diameter taken separately. That's a classic focus on actions. Meanwhile, Ford learned that Mazda's focus was to actively manage the gap between the outer diameter of the valves within the transmission and the corresponding bore of the valve. Focusing on the gap is how Toyota operates. Okay, and there's plenty of evidence of that. In doing so, Mazda's efforts realized that there's an ideal gap resulting from ideal values for both the bore and the valve, and that they also operate with an awareness that there's variation in the size of the gaps. They don't treat the gap passively, they treat the gap actively. Okay, and by focusing on the gap, they're focusing on the relationship between the parts and managing that gap actively, resulting in the higher functioning transmission. And these are practices that we put into place within Aerojet Rocketdyne with amazing success. And yet I find little evidence of that gap management in the literature explaining how Toyota operates. Okay, and a further clarification, in a business as usual environment, the diameter for the bore of the valve is specified and it's made as small as possible. If you were to give a term page requirement, you'd likely see minimum number of pages on a scale of 20 to 25. For valve diameter, what Ford found is that the valves in their transmissions were made the outer diameter as large as possible. Okay. And as an everyday example of what this means, we went bowling a few years ago as a family, and upon walking down the hallway towards the master bedroom, I found my wife's bowling ball, as you see here. When I asked our son why he placed it there, his response was, "Mom said put it in the bedroom." Okay, he did. He met the requirements. That's classic focusing on actions. Right? And I thank our son and daughter for those types of examples. So hope you're saying is that focus on everyone doing their task is not what Toyota is doing. All right? And so let me go further here. The macro system model says it doesn't matter how we meet requirements. As long as we meet requirements, that's all that matters. And that's a way of managing resources and saying as long as the car has gas, it doesn't matter how much. As long as we meet requirements. Okay. The contrast between how Ford manages resources and Mazda, which also I would say is the difference between how Ford and Toyota manage resources, is within Ford, in a classic business as usual environment, resources are managed by each person to their own personal benefit. What you see going on within Mazda, and I've seen this and I've heard anecdotes of this, not published, but I've heard accounts of this within Toyota, that they are managing resources for mutual benefit, not individual benefits. So the left-hand side, again, I've written about this, we call it mind the part. The right-hand side, we refer to it as mind the gap. Thank you to the London Underground. Organizations as unusual to bring this all together. Another example, a baseball team represents business as unusual. Again, at least a professional baseball team, as you're seeing here, LA Dodgers. Okay, that's as unusual. You know, what am I looking for? I'll show you. Okay. Here's Manchester United. I'm not sure who they're playing. But this is another example of business as unusual. Okay, again, what do I mean by unusual? What I mean is, I don't see on the baseball field, nor on a football pitch, a box that tells each player where they must stand. What you see is as any player moves, the others move in association with great harmony, right? They are interdependent players. They do not stand in their own box and say, I would love to help you in marketing, but I'm stuck over here in operations. Okay, that flexibility adds to the organization. That flexibility would allow a two-headed rattlesnake to live much longer than a one-headed rattlesnake, yet two-headed rattlesnakes in the wild have a very short life expectancy. To me, that represents a business-as-usual model where the two heads are not working together. If they were, they should live longer. So it's all about togetherness. What does it mean to work together, learn together, think together? The birds in this photo are not flying independently, they are flying interdependently. Okay, it's all about association and harmony. Okay, Dr. Deming, the prevailing system of management must undergo transformation. The system cannot understand itself. The transformation requires an outside view. All right, and let me just fast forward through these slides here that are all in the handouts. The main thing I want to get across there at the end is that what Dr. Deming is talking about is managing relationships, managing resources with a sense of interdependence, not independence. That's the fundamental difference between business as usual and unusual. It's viewing quality not on each part, but it's looking at how well things come together. That's an appreciation for the system. Knowledge about variation, that all these elements in the system have variation. There's a learning model involved, and there are people involved. The model we've been using at Aerojet Rocketdyne is to introduce this awareness to individuals such that it evolves how they learn together, how they work together. It further evolves how the organization operates. And as a result, we get a reinforcing loop that individuals are then beginning to see a shift in the thinking of the organization, and we have evidence of that. Going back to this original model, okay, organizations tend to operate in the lower left. A far better place to be would be operating in the entire right-hand side, which means it's okay to be reactive if it's a choice. to the lower left referred to as reflexive resource management. The entire right-hand side is viewed as purposeful because we thought about it. We thought about the interdependencies in a business-as-usual, unusual environment, and we decide it's worthwhile to be proactive or reactive. And there's value in being reactive, such as replacing the light bulbs when they fail and waiting for that to happen. So the lower left is again, another example of managing resources in a business-as-usual, organizations-as-usual environment. And the right-hand side, highly unusual. Opportunities to act. Understand the difference between quality defined by relationships, and those are examples from Dr. Taguchi and Dr. Deming, and quality defined as conformance to requirements, which, again, you'll find is the dominant system in every organization I've seen. Understand the difference between production viewed as a system versus production viewed as a linear flow of tasks. I've been in quite a few meetings talking about, you know, with Kaizen events or value stream mapping exercises where the model the organization is distinctly working with is linear, not nonlinear. There's not a sense of what comes around goes around. The tasks are viewed as independent, not interdependent. Let me add on to this the value of focusing on actions which are good. Again, put gas in the car before it runs out. And then the focus on interactions, which is where in the organization can we put a stitch in time to save nine? Those are opportunities for investment that we're missing when we focus on actions alone, and then further missing when we wait for the bad things to happen. All right. And again, my contact information there. Please do not hesitate to contact me on LinkedIn or on this email address, bill@intuin.org, and I look forward to your questions and the time remaining. And then beyond that, I look forward to interacting with you on Skype or FaceTime and exploring any of this in far more detail.
Cool. That's incredible.
I'm sorry, was it?
Okay, another question over here. Now, why don't you explain how it's going to work with the questions? Because what we've got is we've got an iPad, so you just try over to your iPad. That iPad's got an audio feed going over to Bill, and then Bill will be able to ask the question, and I will come back to you. I said it was like a really good feature. Maybe we did not quite reach holographic versions yet.
I'm not sure. Hold on a minute. No, I can't. My colleague is going to give me his explanation of the question. Let's see if I got this right.
Well, he asked the question about problems as minor hours. And he said the tendency is for people to say the problem is IT or HR.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll give you another. See if this sounds familiar. For any of you with children, and your spouse refers to, look at the mess your son made. Or on the other hand, look what our daughter did. And so what you see is, you know, what you're talking about, yeah, pay close attention to the hour on the mind, and that tells you everything about, the beauty of that simple four-quadrant model is it doesn't take much to pick up on the mind or the hour. And again, when things go well, it's our. When things go bad, it's yours. All right? And then if you look at what we focus on things that are bad, not good. You know, I once had a chance, I was invited to speak at the Army's largest annual logistics conference, and the host was a 3-star general, a woman. And I kidded her. I said, "So what's it like testifying to the U.S. Senate when they call you in and want to know how you screwed up?" As opposed to the senators asking, "General Dunwoody, how did we create a system which made it so hard for you to operate it?" You know, another, going back to your question, another telltale sign, everyday thing that that may strike a chord with you is when somebody tells you you need to have your hearing checked. And how much of this comes from the belief that what the person said to you was clear to them, therefore, if it's not clear to you, it must be you?
I think you're picking up on something you talked about earlier. You were talking about our language generally. I'm in danger of using our glossy to talk about this song.
Now, when it comes to the word. Go ahead. Thank you for the opportunity.